almost time. 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Blast off.
Cool jam.
Very cool.
Hey, what song is that? Why do we have cool music today?
That's Herbie Hancock, I believe.
I believe the song is Revolution from the Spy Funk soundtrack from Ivan Dixon's The Spook Who Sat by the Door, which we just watched last week at Sun Cinema. We'll talk a bit about it later.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Hey, welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast. It's a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I am your host, Jason Cauley, and with me, as always, are the two co-hosts of the show, Ryan Hunter Mitchell and David Cabrera. Gentlemen.
Hey, Jason.
What's up?
All right.
I guess not as always. I missed you guys last week.
Yeah, you...
I keep on...
How was the silent hairdresser retreat? We talked
about
it.
Yeah, we had a silent retreat. We were only allowed to speak through a megaphone that we had brought nice. or a portable karaoke machine, which we had also brought.
Whoever's perfect. Holding the megaphone gets to speak.
Yeah, I mean, we just annoyed the hell out of West Virginia for a couple of days. It was pretty good. Have either of you guys seen Annihilation?
Yeah, I saw Annihilation.
I have not.
Okay, well, I'll not spoil it for anyone, but we were just like imagined this Annihilation type scenario. Where, like, all the creatures and woods around us were becoming more and more similar to us and just becoming more disoriented, unable to walk, angry at each other, and just, like, overall shitty. We kind of imagined this, like, Annihilation version, but with, like, us.
Sounds peaceful.
Yeah, it was very... exactly.
What a retreat.
The podcast went well. I took a listen to it. It was great.
Took a gander. Yeah.
Podcast no, went listen. Well. Had a filmmaker on for guests. And, it was a smooth show.
And how was the cinema last week? What did we watch? Did we do?
We watched some cool stuff, I believe. So Tuesday we watched The Spook Who Sat by the Door, which we will be talking about at length.
Yeah, we figured it was our duty as a cinema podcast and as three white men to have an in-depth conversation about The Spook Who Sat by the Door.
What a movie. The soundtrack, everything about it, but we'll delve into that later. On Wednesday, we did Summer Slash, so Donna Slash and Jack's Knife.
Yeah. How did that go?
Did a screening of Wet Hot American Summer. They started with an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, did a little drag show. It was great. Yeah, it wasn't as... you can't top Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Wet Hot American Summer is just funny also and much more engaging.
Right.
So there was less sort of...
Get a little more sucked in.
Yeah, there's less...
Well, did they need to chime in?
Yeah, that was the thing. There wasn't as much to say because it's just so good and everyone's just...
They're already funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jack's Knife, when he did his drag show, he had this like blacklight spray. And it was like, all right, like, and Josh was like... All right, you need to turn the lights off. Like, I'll tell you when. And as he's doing it, I'm watching him doing it like in front of the screen, and I'm like,
no.
Oh no, it's gonna like there's just gonna be this weird black light thing happening on our screen from now on.
In the shape of Jack's Knife.
Yeah, just the shape of a body. It didn't happen though, so it was fine. Anyways,
did the black light spray work though?
It did work. It looked really cool when we turned the lights off.
Oh, cool.
We should get some.
Yeah, we should
for
do
the
that.
Screen.
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Just for when we're at Suns. So people can order their drinks more easily during movies. Yeah. It's like, oh, just look for the
Dave
guy
in the
covered
back
in
waving
black light. Then Thursday we did a screening of Los Sures, which is a cool Puerto Rican doc. We talked a lot about that last week. We raised some money for Friends of Puerto Rico. So that was cool. Roadhouse,
always a fan favorite.
Roadhouse is great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
How was Sam Elliott? And
Sam Elliott was great. Yeah,
isn't he actually like much younger than he looks in that movie? I believe in he's younger
movie,
than Swayze.
Probably. I don't know about that.
It was a chiller chiller time than last year or last time we did
well,
it.
Well, last time we did it was like for St. Patrick's Day, right? It was like St. Patrick Swayze.
That's true.
Right. We were asking for it.
Yeah. But it was still fun. It was a good, you know, it was rowdy enough. Not, well, you know, we didn't have to do the bouncer, which is, anyways. What was the other one?
Zoolander. Oh, actually, do you have that clip from Zoolander?
Look, without Derek Zoolander, male modeling wouldn't be what it is today.
That's our president.
Donald Trump was in the movie. I didn't remember that.
I didn't either.
The opening credits, but oh man, well, I was downstairs and you could hear the roar of booze. I was like, "What just happened?"
Yeah, the way that it's set up right now, it's hard to like see the screen if you're working upstairs. But when I heard the boo, and then I like looked out and I was like, "Oh shit."
He's much better in like movies where he's pretending to be aware of a male model that exists. I wonder if they like if he knew he was acting. If they're just like, "Hey, can you plug our guy, Derek Zoolander?"
Yeah,
like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, he's great. He is an inspiration to male modeling. Yeah, all caps.
And then Sunday was the Red Shoes. Jason was going to come, but then he didn't.
Yeah, we ended up having to go to some other thing, but
can you tell us about it?
Instead of talking about the movie, let's talk about what you did.
It was a 1-year-old's birthday party in Petworth, so
yeah,
could you tell us about Red Shoes, because I'm sure you know it pretty well.
Oh yeah, no, the Red Shoes is great. The Pressburger film was it 1948?
Yeah.
And it's just one, two or three Academy Awards, was nominated for a whole slew of Academy Awards, but it's basically the story of a ballerina going through the process of becoming like a prima ballerina. And that sounds in and of itself like a pretty basic story, but it is hard to explain on radio, like the transition of Technicolor in this film and how it...
That's beautiful.
Oh my God, it's so inspiring. And it was a favorite of, this is an odd thing, but it was a favorite of Martin Scorsese's when he was in film school at NYU. He used to check it out every weekend, truly, you know, like the can, and view it there at NYU.
Wow.
And says it's one of the most influential films he ever saw growing up.
Yeah, he's noted for saying it's like the best color film
ever.
Yeah. The title sequence made me think of Wes Anderson, which is obviously backwards, but...
Right.
Obviously ripped it off. Yeah. Wes Anderson.
Yeah. He had a time machine. Yeah, so that was last week. What do we...
We did it. We made it that week.
All right.
It's a good week. It's pretty strong.
It was a strong week. Yeah, there was a lot of diverse fun.
Yeah, we're pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean...
what do we got coming up?
Coming up. Tonight is Can Dialectics Break Bricks? I've been... psyched about it. The Tuesdays have been fun and interesting, and I'm psyched about this one for sure. It's an old kung fu flick that has been dubbed over in French with subtitles. hopefully. with like
hope you know French.
Situationalist, you know, Marxist philosophy, right?
Yeah, it's like a real philosopher friend of ours was in town this weekend that we hadn't seen in a couple of years. He actually teaches the classics at the Sorbonne in France, where he had been for a while, Lex Paulson. Yeah. And that was the one that stuck out to him. He's like, what is Can Dialectics Break Bricks? And we kind of tried to explain it, that it's like Marxist dialectics overdubbed over a kung fu movie. He was into it. He gives his approval from not seeing it. So
good.
We're philosopher kings.
Wednesday, Pharaoh Hawk presents White Dog.
Controversial.
Jesus. Samuel Fuller.
All right.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I guess. It's about a dog that's raised to be racist, and it's about some people trying to train the dog to not be racist, and it begs some questions about nature versus nurture, and can certain things be unlearned, and...
Was this movie censored? Is that correct? No?
It was definitely poo-pooed by the NAACP at the time, because it is about a dog that's chasing around black people.
Right.
Okay.
But it does have a very strong anti-racist message.
And it's weird because I've seen the preview, the trailer for it at Suns a couple of times, and people don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah, well,
they kind of, there's some nervous laughter in there.
So the first trailer that we were showing, I showed during another screening that Tarek did, and he said, "This trailer isn't racist enough."
Jesus.
So then I found another one that really, because that the initial trailer doesn't really, it just talks about an attack dog. It doesn't really tell you that this is clearly about like a racist dog. So the second trailer is more so, but it also is longer and gets into more of the like campy scenes. So it's like, it's hitting on like the like serious racist stuff, and then also some of the severe camp stuff. And that's probably why people don't, I don't even know what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm like, am I supposed to laugh at this part? I don't know.
All I've taken is that dog ownership is inherently racist.
Right. Right.
Especially if it's a white dog.
Yeah. Specifically. What about Swayze's black dog? We should have shown that also this month, where he's a truck driver.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's we should have.
I don't know. I think the Swayze lineup's pretty tight.
Yeah.
I guess Point Break's better than Black Dog.
Point Break's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Like, just for a fun time, man. I'll watch Point Break.
So that one's Friday, Point Break.
Which, of course, is beautiful.
We're debating which Point Break we're going to show.
We got to punk them. Anyone who doesn't listen to this podcast, which is only a couple people, who doesn't.
Oh, right.
Who shows up on Friday. I think everyone who comes to our cinema listens to this. But sneak preview for those of you who do. We're probably going to play like the opening credits from the
recent
Point Break.
The new Point Break, yeah.
Just fake everyone out. But before that, we're playing King of Kong.
Yeah. Do we have a
Fistful of Quarters? I found like a clip of a bunch of Billy Mitchellisms. The first one, he kind of explains competitive gaming, which is kind of fun. I mean, the guy is just a dick in the whole movie.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it.
He is. I mean, he's tiresome at points.
Do you have any of those Billy Mitchell clips or nah? Did I not put them on here? Did I think I did?
Yeah, we got them.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
There'll always be the argument that video games are meant to be played for fun.
So serious.
Believe me, some of it's a lot of fun. Video games are meant to be played at home, relaxing, on a couch, amongst friends. And they are. And that's fun. But competitive gaming, when you want to attach your name to a world record, when you want your name written into history, you have to pay the price.
Oh my God.
All right,
I couldn't survive a lunch with this guy.
Get a fucking grip.
Oh, the guy.
So if you haven't seen the movie, so it goes into a little bit of the culture of competitive gaming from the 80s on these arcade systems.
Yeah.
And Billy Mitchell was like the king of competitive gaming in the 80s, had the world record for a bunch of games. And then over time, as like newcomers came, he lost most of his records, except for Donkey Kong held. Like, he was by far had the highest score.
Give him his due, yeah.
This random guy who doesn't know anything about gaming culture, wasn't around in the 80s, Steve Weeb, like, loses his job as a teacher or something.
Is his last name Weeb?
Yeah,
because they talk about this throughout the movie. Is it Weeb? I think it's Weeb.
I think it's Weeb as well.
Anyways. Wow. But he's just
very
like,
unfortunate.
You know, I'm pretty good at Donkey Kong. Yeah, I'm going to see if I can get a world record for it. And he's just this likable, lovable guy who represents good so easily. He's just like a substitute science teacher, and he's trying to get this record. And then he comes like head on with the establishment of gamers with this Billy Mitchell guy who's just a total prick. And it just plays out better than you would think, a movie about Donkey Kong. I don't play any video games, and I love this movie.
Right. Yeah. Same here.
There's a lot of follow-up after the movie also. We can talk about that next time.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about the follow-up.
Point Break.
All right. It's beautiful.
Saturday we're doing the last day of camp, which is a night. What are we doing that night?
Well, Fail University couldn't make it this...
Yeah, they failed too.
They failed, which we could have seen. Well,
thank you, Jack.
So we figured summertime party. We did like a beach party last time they failed.
Yeah.
And this time camp seemed to work pretty well with what we're showing.
Yeah.
Uh, Yeah, well, we'll show a lot of... there's a ton of camp movies, not just Sleepaway Camp. There's a bunch. A bunch of clips from Moonrise Kingdom, a lot of campfire songs.
We'll do a lot of...
Lanyards.
We're going to encourage acoustic guitars, right?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
That like, sounds so... Oh.
Like creamed scrambled eggs. There's going to be all the good stuff. Whistles. We definitely will have lanyard materials and lanyard tutorials, so... So it'll be fun.
I'm going to do a bonfire in the front.
Yeah, it's going to be sick. And it's going to be raining, so we can go on a night hike. I don't know. A whole bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
People are like, what is this place?
What is... So if you haven't been to our cinema, it's a bonfire.
Why are you listening?
Yeah. Why... Do you think you were going to learn about movies by listening to this?
So then Sunday, we're showing Blue is the Warmest Color, which is a... Very beautiful. French?
French won.
French?
Did it win the Palme d'Or?
I think so.
I think it received
it's a good one. It's a good. It's just a good one. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next week.
It's really long. I just realized that.
Oh, it is. It is very long.
David always is like, which I understand, he's just... thinking about it like having to sit through all these movies all the time, just like, oh, that one's long. We were debating showing Heat for various reasons.
And Lawrence of Arabia.
Just long ass movies.
Yeah.
Super long.
Hey, Blue is the Warmest Color. I think it comes in right at 3 hours, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you know. Great.
Cool.
Cool. Should we play a little clip that kind of summarizes the premise of Spooky Sap at the Door, and then do a little chat on that?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Jack, you want to...
The refs are already asking...
What?
I'm sorry, that was still a conversation on Donkey Kong happening in the background.
Billy the Butte Mitchell.
Let me show him the door real quick.
He never stops.
Boot him.
Compensation and socioeconomic balancing.
Yes, good. But am I winning or losing?
Losing, Senator.
Losing. But why? The computers had me ahead last December.
It checks out on both computers, plus the one we have as a safety valve backstopping cross-check. If the elections were held today, you would lose by... 1.846 percentile.
1.846 percentile. Oh, yes. The computers don't lie.
Isn't there a possible breakthrough with any of the peer groups? How are we doing on the Jewish vote?
The senator's solid with the Jews, Mrs. Hennington. The Negroes are the trouble spot.
The Negroes? I'm the best friend those people have in Washington.
Oh, man.
The computers indicate a sharp decline immediately after your law and order speech last winter.
Perfect. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, okay. Is there more? Yeah, wait.
All right. Certainly. Now, let's see if we can come up with some ideas here. First, how do we retrieve the lost black vote?
Gil, why don't we accuse the CIA of a racially discriminatory hiring policy? They have no Negroes, except on a menial level, you know.
Certain, Belinda. I mean, that may be it.
Ta-da.
I'm positive, but I'll check it out with our man over at personnel.
Good.
Whoever they select will be the best known spy since 007.
Enough of that. Right. Well, so that's the intro. That's like the opening scene of the movie is in a senator's office who's seeking re-election. You want to just go over?
Yeah. So basically, the story begins. It's a white liberal senator. He's facing like a tight re-election vote, as computed. He's trying to figure out ways to win the Negro vote. His wife suggests he accuses Central Intelligence.
Do you try hot sauce in his purse?
Yeah.
Too soon. Sorry.
His wife suggests he accuses the CIA of racial discrimination because they have no black officers.
And it works.
So they recruit black Americans for training, and only Dan Freeman, who is also secretly a black nationalist, successfully completes the training. And then he earns the highest grades and best marks for athleticism. And then, having become the first black man in the CIA, he's given a desk job. He eventually quits. And
well, he becomes like the
token.
They give him some like really shit title. He's like the director of reproduction. He's the copy guy.
And there are some great scenes of him playing up. He's like, no, I just want to do a good job. I would be the best.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's funny because in that synopsis you mentioned like, oh, he's this secretly he's a black nationalist.
Which you don't know watching it.
No, watching it, you really...
you don't know that.
You don't know that. Apparently the book explains that.
Okay.
But yeah, so you kind of can't tell what his thing is, if he's like sincere or not.
Yeah.
But anyways, he's a great copy guy. The CIA kind of notices, they get a little pat on the back for being integrated.
Right. So then he quits and he moves to Southside Chicago to quote unquote be a social worker. And he basically takes the training and starts a black nationalist revolution.
Yeah, he like rejoins his old gang.
Yeah,
right?
The Cobras. And
trains them.
Trains them. It's great because there are scenes like the training, the CIA training scenes.
Right.
They basically mirrored exactly. Like he says the same things and does exactly the same things. It's really funny. But
yeah. He trains them.
And he trains them and they start an American revolution, more or less. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of by the end. You gather there's some.
It's happening.
Revolution is happening.
Yeah.
Not just in Chicago, but they've expanded by the end of the movie. Over. Chapters, yeah, all over the country.
So I didn't see it. You guys both saw it at Suns, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
How was that experience? Cool?
Good. I feel like it was good.
People were really into it. There were, it wasn't a huge crowd, but everybody was like...
Right on.
Right on, man.
Yeah.
David was texting me during the movie, which doesn't happen all the time, just like, wow, this movie's really cool.
Yeah.
And then I watched it on YouTube because you can just stream it on YouTube.
Yeah.
But apparently up until YouTube, it was actually quite hard to see this movie until it wasn't released on DVD or, VHS until 2003 or four.
Yeah.
Well, and Ivan Dixon, like, I guess had said, and there's some truth to this according to the Richard Brody article in the New Yorker, which we'll get to, but, that it really was like the FBI and CIA did not really want this in theaters and had purportedly gone to movie theater owners and said, hey, you're not going to show this.
Yeah, they basically pulled like
confiscated some of the prints, right? Really? There's only one print left or something.
Yeah,
a lot of
it was saved under a different title and like thrown into a pile.
If you watch the movie, you understand why, because you're most likely rooting for this upheaval.
So it's often kind
it's
of
complicated,
a
but,
mislabeled, or I hear there's debate on this labeling of it as a blaxploitation film, which, if you see the movie, makes so much sense. Like, there is this undercurrent of, like, listen, people are going to think what they're going to think about the black community, or in this case with the film, blaxploitation. Like, they're kind of going to not take it as a serious film or as anything you're doing is serious. Once they start, you know, robbing armories and all these things throughout the movie, they're like, no one's going to even think we did it because we're just these local street gangs who are junkies, et cetera, et cetera. And that's almost what it does with, like, it kind of probably flew, they thought it might fly under the radar as, like, a blaxploitation film.
Right.
And it's actually, like, a very socially critical, good action movie. Not that it's not problematic for a bunch of reasons, but it is a great movie, I would say, just even on just the markings of cinematography, music, acting. Yeah. It's like really well done. It's completely aside from its societal.
Yeah, there's no hint of camp or anything happening.
No.
It's very...
a little bit. The beginning is a little...
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Because I remember, I mean, when I watched it, I thought the first half was engaging. I was like, this is cool, this is good, this is fun. And then the second half, like...
Gets very
real.
Yeah.
So I think there's sort of an evolution. But anyway.
Well, Anyone want to read this Richard Brody excerpt? Because he just last week, Richard Brody.
So it's also playing at Metrograph. The Metrograph. Yeah. There's another article by in Screen Slate.
The Metrograph in New York City.
Yeah, Metrograph.
Wait,
in New York
we played
City.
It before him though.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom.
Yeah.
Take that, Metrograph.
Fuck you, New York.
Yeah. I know all of New York's so cool. Listen to our podcast thinking they're all cool.
Yeah. The Richard Brody article, though, came out because playing at the Metrograph and Richard Brody, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know who Richard Brody is, maybe. you're going pretty deep into your cinephile.
And if you're Richard Brody, you're probably listening to this podcast.
And Richard Brody, you know, nod to you, friend of the podcast. But he wrote, and we'll just read this, you know, small excerpt, but the power of what Dixon, the filmmaker, accomplishes is revealed in as much as what's not on screen as in what is on screen. The spook is set by the door isn't about the ideological or organizational development of a political party. It's not about a public relations war or an advocacy campaign. Rather, it's about a cold, clear truth that infuses the movie with an existential ferocity. Dixon's film doesn't offer a litany of disparate grievances. It displays a bedrock of racist attitudes and assumptions that renders racist policies both inescapable and irreparable. Sorry, I can't talk today. In effect, the question that the film poses regarding the revolutionary action of Black Americans and renders it so daring isn't why, but why not?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a rough reading.
No, it was good. You know, it's funny because he mentions this as like a strength to the film, which upon reading it, I do agree with it. Like, it does just overall, there's just like racist attitudes in every certain way throughout the movie, just how the police treat people, how the senators are talking about focus groups and all these things. But what I was thinking, like, I would have been interested to see him like actually going on CIA missions and seeing how they might be problematic or them do things to devastate communities. But, you know, while reading this article, it's like, actually, he didn't need to do any of that. He's just the copy guy. He was just learning some tactics. He didn't need to have some turning point where he all of a sudden gets this revolutionary attitude.
Because he had it all along.
Yeah.
The whole CIA for him was a cover, you know?
Yeah.
As a means to an end to get to Chicago to start the revolution.
Yeah. And then, but also it's not just the CIA. You don't even need to go into how the CIA is specifically racist or anything. Like that would be too easy of a cheap shot. You know,
right.
The police are racist. Oh, the CIA is racist. Sure. There are those problems, but it's also just like what he says. There's lines in the film like, hey, if we're holding a broom and a smile, we can get anywhere in society. Society's complicit. It, you know, at times it becomes like it's maybe anti-National Guard or anti-police, but really it's about like society. They're talking about why they're confined into the ghetto as economically, educationally. I mean, they touch on all these things, so they don't focus on one in particular, which would be easy and fun to like, but also makes it too easy for us. You know, it's just if we just see the CIA going and busting up Black communities, like, oh, they're evil. No, he's just like, no, listen, society's racist.
Yeah.
What's up.
They're positing some big ideas. And I mean, I kept going back to this, like, after I watched it and subsequently reading some of the stuff about it, you're like, yeah, this was 1973. So it's not like 19 or even current day DC and Chicago, which have their own issues still,
sure,
you know, but 1973 DC, political scene, 1973 South Side of Chicago. Like some real serious hardships happening, some real serious racism happening. And this film like takes it head on.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I was meaning more about the, like, it's taking its statements and it's taking its viewpoints very seriously.
Absolutely.
You know,
like it's not adding campiness to that at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I think is what makes it just like a good action movie.
Yeah.
Definitely in contrast to like a blaxploitation. Like, sure, it may accidentally be characterizing people and different positions, but it is like a pretty solid action movie. And then it uses that with, you know, good music, cool action sequences, sexy characters as a vehicle for like dialogue and societal like critique. There's specifically after a young kid gets shot by police running away, there's like almost an outbreak of violence, and then it kind of
police bring in the dogs.
Yeah, right. Spills over, and then a couple days.
I love that scene, by the way. I thought that scene was so smart.
Shot the tension, so well, too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it builds up, and like there's almost going to be this riot at this street, and the black police officer, who's I'm blanking on his name, but he's like Freeman's old friend,
right?
Who has gone the way of Law and Order, but he a few days later, after all this tension almost spills over and then eventually does spill over, and they start fighting the police, and then the National Guard come in. They're having this conversation.
Dawson's the character.
Dawson, yeah. Dawson, and then they have this conversation in the car, which I think is one of the best scenes. I mean, David told me about the scene right after seeing the movie.
Yeah.
Do you have that clip from that? Any chance, Jack? Are you on the phone? Jack!
Yeah, I'm just, you know, someone else is using the phone, so I have to get the dial-up modem back on here. Jesus. Let's see.
Can we ask the front desk up here to get off our dial-up?
Oh, here we go.
I think that one.
Yeah, that's the one.
Maybe like, a minute and a half in or so.
They may have lost a reservation because of this, but yeah. Oh, well. Here we go.
Not just hoodlums like they say in the newspapers.
In a scene like this, anybody can get involved.
But that's only going to make it worse. We have to maintain law and order, or we might as well be back in the jungles.
Dulles, the ghetto is a jungle, always has been. Understand, you cannot cage people like animals and not expect them to fight back someday. It has always been an army occupation here, with police badges and uniforms. Huh? You and me, a cop and a social worker, we are keepers of this goddamn zoo.
The streets have to be safe.
Safe for who? You're here to protect property, not lives.
Bam.
Boom.
Yeah, and then that, like, just cut.
There you go.
So I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to point out the elephant in the room that none of us are black here. And
that's correct.
If you want to listen to a great conversation about this from real good film critics who discuss this, a couple years ago in 2016, Seton Smith, who used to live in D.C. and used to do a lot of the comedy stuff around here, was a guest on Black Man Can't Jump in Hollywood. And they do a whole episode on Spooky Sat by the Door. And obviously they have a better discussion about the racial element of this show, about the movie, than we can possibly have. But I do think we can look at this as like critique of society and politics in general. You know, if anything, it's criticizing like the policies and like the political ideology of like liberals more than anything else. Like there's constantly this like paying little lip service to having integration, to treating black people as equals. And that's like coming from like a liberal critique. Like they don't even waste time showing like racist honkies somewhere. You know?
Sure.
They're just like showing these smug politicians. So I kind of like that critique of it, especially because I could speak to it more.
Yeah,
but that clip is great. Just like they go on to talk about from that, like you're just protecting property. Well, don't we have property? And it's like, man, you think we have property? At the end of the day, we're still and a second-class citizen.
Yeah.
That's a great talk. So it's a great one-liner. We just played the clip of...
And I think that's like coming off the heels of that kind of riot scene that was happening the night before. I think it's the night before, right?
It's 3 days. Oh, yeah, he hasn't slept in 3 days.
That's right.
Now the National Guard is there. And right. It's getting, now they're going to fight the National Guard.
But yeah, I think they do a great job of not kind of creating these dumb kind of white honky kind of characters, even in the riot scene with the dogs and everything else. It's, you can tell the cops are kind of freaking
flustered.
Out. They don't know what to do either. And, it just, I probably maybe outside of like something like the end of Do the Right Thing or something like that is probably the only thing comparable I've seen to like, oh man, this
you
is
feel like,
like
you're in it.
Yeah. You feel like you're participating. It's a lot of handheld camera. You're like right in the middle of the action. You can feel the congestion happening.
Like you're about to get knocked over.
You wince.
Yeah. There were multiple times sitting in my seat where, you're kind of doing the bobbing and weaving.
Absolutely.
You know, you're like, just super smart in how they kind of portrayed pieces of this movie as, in terms of not just going for the easy way out of having a dumb, stupid, bad white mm-hmm. character. You know, these are like, hey, this is how a riot breaks out. You know,
it's very nuanced.
Watch this. You're like, oh God, all right, I'm in.
Yeah, people are legitimately upset. Police show up. That's upsetting people more. Some people are trying to calm people down.
And they almost have it calmed down. That was the whole thing. Like, they had kind of gotten everybody just about ready to disperse, and people they kind of do the brow wipe, and all of a sudden the ducks show up, and they're like, oh my God, now here we go again, you know. Super smart.
Yeah. So good, just on a film level. Also, you know, when you like Google this or like talk about the movie to anyone, people start bringing up movies left mm-hmm. and right that were like influenced by this. There's a great article a couple years ago when Django Unchained came out. AV Club
wrote a good
story. And they talk about like, this is going to make people kind of wide-eyed at Django Unchained. And they're like, it doesn't even go far enough. Like 1973, there was this movie, which I think is, I would put it above Django Unchained, which I like.
Sure.
I would too.
But Django Unchained didn't get pushed out of theaters, obviously. Tarantino can like do whatever he wants. People brought up Black Panther.
Yeah, a lot.
Jason, you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen Black Panther, no.
It's good. Worth watching.
Yeah, no, I've got to get to it.
But like the villain in Black Panther, Killmonger, is...
it's a little on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So Killmonger makes him kind of on the nose as like a bad guy, but... He basically carries like the ideology from this movie.
Oh, okay, I see.
And there's a lot of debate about who's the good guy, who's the bad guy in Black Panther.
Right.
And
because you can see those perspectives so clearly.
Right. Yeah. Which this movie kind of, that scene in the car is somewhat similar to a scene with Killmonger and who's the other?
T'Challa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're having these like same conversations about what is right.
A debate over
except for
the best way to kind of achieve their goals or whatever.
Right.
Exactly.
But that movie is focused more on the nonviolent side, right? Or I don't
yeah.
know.
You know, I'll say it's a Disney movie, you know, Black Panther.
Sure.
And by now a lot of people have seen it and we're not going to give the best conversation on it, but despite it being a Disney movie, I think it does like give some productive options, which is why there's like some moral authority in the Black Panther's character in that movie. It's because he's showing a life of like non-colonialization and renewable energy, happy people, cultural identity. So that's a luxury that's not given to either Killmonger in that movie or to the cop and Spooky Sat by the Door. Like, the police officer Dawson doesn't really have like a viable. He can't say like, no, don't worry because we have all these good things. Like,
right.
1973.
Here's all the things that are happening that are gonna, you know, if you just go my way, are gonna pay off in time. There's none of that. He's equally frustrated. He's just found himself in a position where, you know, this is the path he's taken, and he's doing the best he can within that path as being a police officer in this case.
Yeah, and by the end of this, I'll not spoil this, but this really culminates into like a big moment towards the end where I think you're left like wondering, actually, can I support this fictional revolution?
Yeah, it gets
or not?
Almost
like,
Shakespearean at the end with these two characters coming kind of head to head.
Yeah,
explosive ending.
Yeah, so it's really just a great movie, and it does leave you wondering at the end, like if it's what's right or not, even in this fictional
world. And it doesn't attempt to kind of claim a side either, which I thought was really smart by the end. I mean, there's definitely a cinematic kind of ending to it that takes a particular point of view, but it doesn't try to tell you.
You could easily
You could look at it and go, okay, well, in the aftermath of what transpired, you know, this is definitely the wrong way to go. Or you could look at it as, hey, he's he's accomplishing his objective and it's moving forward.
Which brings me to my what I saw in this movie as a as a complete reflection was Fight Club.
I think this is great, Ryan. Yeah, what do you
this is okay. So what made me think of it is there's a scene where they're robbing an armory and they throw a rug on the barbed wire and then they lift each other up over it. And it looks exactly like the scene
the
where
soap
they're
scene, right?
stealing the liposuction fat to make the soap in Fight Club. And then the more I thought about it, I really do think I don't know if the book isn't intending this, but certainly, and I don't know if the movie is intending this either, but there's so many comparisons. So here's my angle. So the Cobras, that's the gang that become revolutionaries in Southside and Spooky Sat by the Door, are a cool, at least mostly justified group of revolutionary individuals who get further and further into some really deep revolutionary shit, which is kind of like Fight Club turns into Project Mayhem, which presents itself as confronting some societal wrong. But like instead of lashing out against some like racial oppression, they're just incels. They're like pissed that the models on the underwear ads are ripped, and they feel like they're being surrounded by feminists or something. Right. So they just become shitheads. But either way, they're looking at like some societal problem they're trying to fix via revolution. Edward Norton, as the main character, is like Jack Tyler Durden. Sorry to spoil this for anyone who hasn't seen Fight Club.
Yeah.
He's probably also Tyler Durden. I'm just throwing it out. That's kind of similar to Dan Freeman because there is this like duplicity in the character.
Yeah.
In Spooky Sat by the Door, Freeman is aware of this and is kind of like undercover as this revolutionary. But he also does play the straight-laced man.
Yeah.
You don't even know he's the main character for several minutes because he's so under the radar.
Mm-hmm. Right. They did a great job of that in the movie too. Yeah.
Definitely. Both movies present the case that men can pursue purpose through like joining a club that seeks to overthrow an unfulfilling and immoral society. And both show complications that arise from how like sadistic that becomes and how violence is like seen as a necessary means to an end. Neither of them flesh out female characters. They use them basically just as archetypes.
Yeah.
Doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Does not, yeah.
Definitely.
Because Set by the Door, the women are pretty one note.
I thought they were kind of just like plays off of noir women, which are kind of one note.
Yeah, maybe like, that was...
Like, so that was just in the genre, but it definitely doesn't give any... that's one big problem with their whole revolution. There's like no women involved anywhere, which is actually a lot different than the Black Panthers. But
yeah,
it is like this kind of misogynist group, you know? It is still like very...
It's a boys' club.
It's a boys' club. And they make the women either like...
Much like Fight Club.
Clever, but also sneaky and naggy. You know, it definitely has those negative attributes. Both of the movies end right when revolution is happening, but neither of them like really set up any room for a sequel. And there's a Zizek quote about V for Vendetta that I think like sums this up perfectly. Any chance to get that little clip?
Here it is.
All right.
My joke is always, you know how the film ends. People break the police cordon, occupy the parliament, and then the end of the film. My joke is always that I'm ready to sell my mother into slavery for a film called V for Vendetta Part 2. But what happened the next day? How will they effectively reorganize life? I think this is the great...
Excellent.
Hey, but that is true. Like in a lot of these movies, like, okay,
so now
you
what?
Got revolution... and I think that like could be probably used to critique like actual revolutions over a long period of time. Like, what the hell is your next day going to look like? What do you have to fix it? You still do need that substance. And I also couldn't help but compare this to Sorry to Bother You, which just came out. But I think they kind of do a better angle of making the villains not be police or politicians, which I do think are, even though it's real fleshed out and nuanced and Spooky Sat by the Door, it is an easy one.
Sure.
And I kind of love it, and Sorry to Bother You, they kind of use like high rents, gentrification.
They both have an anti
tech gurus. Yeah, anti-capitalist, but also like what are the things that are holding people down?
Sure.
And they look at it in like a more abstract kind of fun way, but also a real way. Like these like lifestyle gurus are kind of like impacting the world in a terrible way. And that's kind of what's keeping people down. Not to spoil. Sorry to bother you. You should see it. Everyone should see it. Anything else? Anyone?
I think everybody agrees. I mean, this is a film, you know, The Spook Who Sat by the Door is a film, you know, it's playing in New York right now. If you're listening in New York or you're going to New York, go see this film. I mean, take the time.
It's Sunday at the Metrograph.
Is that what it is?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. You know, I mean, but that's the thing, like, it's a film you're not going to get a chance to see in a lot of places, especially on a big screen. I mean, obviously you can stream it or whatever, YouTube it, and you should if that's your only option. But if you've got an option to go see it somewhere like Suns or Metrograph, like, go out and see it. It's a great film to see in a theater with other people. I think it definitely holds up, definitely brings all these new questions into, you know, into the conversation. And for something that was done in 1973 on no budget, I mean, they shot all this neat little trivia note. All the scenes they shot in Chicago on the streets were done without permits. I mean, they just went out and like shot that stuff. That's why so much of it happens at night, because they're just trying to like hustle and get one take and go.
Oh, that's great.
They nailed that.
Yeah, I mean, they did a great
job.
They
really did.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It doesn't come off like it's, you know, done without permits and kind of guerrilla filmmaking style, which is how they shot it.
But it just makes the whole thing so much better hearing that.
No, they just did a great job. It's one of those films, I mean, you can't recommend enough, and it's hard to catch. So, you know, make the time, take the time, find it online or go to a place like Suns or go to a place like, you know, Metrograph and go see it.
Yeah. And
you'll
if
be glad you did.
If it piques your interest, read the Brody article, listen to the Black Man Can't Jump in Hollywood episode from April 14th, 2016 about it. I mean, there's a lot to chew on with the movie. See it with friends.
AV Club article.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
Should we just tease August, or should we just tease that we're going to tease August next month or next week?
Oh, so last week we did talk briefly about an email that we received.
Let's follow up on that.
So we got this.
The request line, yeah.
Yeah, we got it, the TRL, Total Request Live. Someone called in about doing a Whitney Houston movie on her birthday.
When's her birthday?
August 9th. And, you know, I left here on Tuesday and went. Touched. Yeah. And got the rights for us to show Bodyguard on August 9th. So we sent our friend a response email with a link to this podcast and told him he can have some free tickets to the show. And thus far, that is the most popular movie. We've sold the most tickets to Bodyguard.
So get them next month. If you want to celebrate Whitney's birthday at Sun Cinema, buy the tickets soon.
Yeah, we do need to advertise some sort of after.
Oh, we got to play Whitney all night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we can open up the radio station.
I want to dance with some.
That would be sick.
I want to dance with somebody party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pack all the Whitney fans into the studio and just DJ her tunes all night.
That'd be cool.
I do think the Bodyguard soundtrack is actually one of the highest selling albums of all time.
Yeah, if not the only, if not the best selling soundtrack of all time.
No, not just soundtrack, like albums. Oh. Like it's outsold any Beatles album by like a lot.
That's incredible.
We'll verify that next week.
Yeah.
Can we play?
Maybe we'll close with...
close with Bodyguard. I was thinking
It's Not Right, But It's Okay.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that.
I think we're allowed.
I think we can do that.
Jack wills it. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's the show.
Because only two of you had dinner. I found your credit card receipt. It's not right.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org.